This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, you're listening to Beyond the Ballot Box with me, Dashrin Johan. Parti Keadilan Rakyat's party elections are just around the corner. The nominations are in, with results set to be announced sometime in June, while there will be no changes right at the top, as incumbent President Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim has retained his post uncontested. There's still a lot of excitement at other leadership levels, with the likes of Rafizi Ramli announcing his return to frontline politics by gunning for the deputy president post. But what does this mean for the future of PKR? Joining me on the show to discuss this is YB Nik Nazmi Ning Ahmad. He's PKR's organising secretary and Setia Wangsa MP. Welcome to the show, YB.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
PKR's election track record hasn't been great in recent months. We're talking about thumping defeats in Melaka and Johor especially, not so great performances in Sabah and Sarawak either. In fact, looking at all of these results, Dr. Bridget Welch, a known political analyst in Malaysia, she did an analysis recently which suggests that PKR could be going back to 2004 levels of popularity at GE15 unless something drastic changes soon. What is your analysis of the situation? Why has PKR been in an undeniable slump as of late?
The most important part of this, I think, is actually affecting all the Pakatan Harapan parties, right, where the three parties has not really moved on from the Sheraton move. Right. And the party that was most affected by the Sheraton move was obviously Keadilan. Hmm. Because, we had so many MPs who left or were sacked during that painful process that brought down the first non-UMNO government that we had in Malaysia. So, since then, the focus has always been about how do we move on, who do we blame, and how do we get back into power. And the series of state election defeats that we've seen, Sabah was a bit isolated because it was very early on, where I think Keadilan pretty much retained what we had in Sabah. But we did super badly in Melaka, in Sarawak and in Johor.
All right.
So obviously the focus is on Keadilan. And obviously I'm part of the leadership and I'm not trying to distance myself. But I kept saying that, we have to go back to the basics. Hmm. Whether we like it or not, the issue of mandate and whatnot, that's not relevant for most of the voters. What are relevant in the West, they would say bread and butter issues. Maybe in Malaysia, it's periuk nasi issues.
Right.
Things that affect, what we eat, what we consume, cost of living, mm-hmm. The recovery from the pandemic. Those are big issues. And I think in order to be relevant, we need to focus on that rather than navel-gazing on the Sheraton move. If we see, I wouldn't say he's very successful, but the resurgence in popularity for Najib Razak to a certain extent is just by focusing on these periuk nasi issues. So whether it's rational or not, and that's another argument altogether. But, looking at the EPF thing, and Muhyiddin himself actually was campaigning on FELDA debt cancellation. So those are actually economic issues that affect the voters. And I think that was our strength, PH, going to the 2018 elections.
And I think you bring up great points. And that is something that people have been clamoring for as well. People have been clamoring for PKR and PH as a whole to focus on bread and butter issues instead of just, doing the whole Pengkhianat narrative over and over and over again. But there's another aspect to this, and perhaps it all ties together, because some political analysts have also pointed to Anwar Ibrahim as one of the key reasons for PKR's waning popularity. And one of the points brought up is that there's no doubt that, without him, there would be, no PKR. And in fact, opposition perhaps wouldn't be where it is today without the sacrifices that he has done over the years, especially in the 90s and whatnot. But the argument against that is that a lot of Anwar doesn't have the same appeal among the new generation of voters, as many do not remember what I just mentioned. They may not even be alive during the whole Ops Lalang, the whole sacking of Anwar Ibrahim by Tun Dr. Mahathir. A lot of people, they were not born during that time. And instead, what new generation of voters, younger voters, see Anwar is that he's the I have the numbers guy, you know, the guy that was arguing with Tun Dr. Mahathir, you know, scamp for throughout Pakatan Harapan's time in power. That may not necessarily be his fault specifically, but, you know, and people also see him as someone who, you know, perhaps is too focused on becoming the prime minister above all else. What are your thoughts on this?
Obviously, being a political party, you know, winning power is, to me, I mean, it has to be part of the equation. Right. And that includes being prime minister, because not for the sake of getting power, enriching ourselves, you know, living comfortable lives, getting, I don't know, face mask projects. Whatever. To me, you know, winning power is because it's also the means to do change. To have to initiate positive change in society, to combat inequality, poverty, to confront racial and religious extremism. So we need power for that, right? And that's why Pakatan Harapan campaigned for power. So ambition and power per se is not wrong. But I agree on one point, in the sense that there needs to be a stronger portrayal of the talent that the party has.
Right.
Keadilan now has a membership of 1 million. Rough estimate, I mean, last numbers I heard, UMNO is about 3.5. PAS is about 1.5 to 2 million, something right. like that. Keadilan is 1 million. So we are third. You know, and those are two very, very established cradle-to-grave Malay-Muslim political parties.
Right.
We are multiracial. We are national. We are the only one that's present in every single division, from Perlis to Sabah, and we've elected reps from every major community in the country. So we should do more to portray our talent, because I'm a testimony to that. When I was elected in 2008, I was 26 years old, and it was not just me. There was Nurul Izzah; she was 28. Mm-hmm. Chang Li Kang, who was 28 or 29, you know, and many of the rest who got voted in that election. And then 2013, the same thing, you know, we kept on pushing young talents. And many of us, you know, I've been sitting in the political bureau, which is the highest body that runs the party day to day, since directly and indirectly since 2009, right? So while we have many young faces, or relatively young, I don't consider myself super young, but it's also people who have experience.
Right.
I don't think, I mean, other party may be talking about youth, but yeah, you know, barring one or two, most of them are newbies in politics.
Right.
Nothing wrong with that. But I'm saying that there are times that you also need experience. There are times that you need youth, and, you know, you need to combine that. So I think Keadilan has that mix. Unfortunately, I think because, you know, when the, I mean, we do have to mention Sheraton. When that happened, you know, Azmin Ali left. And right. He has been, I think, since 2010, pretty much the anointed sort of number two in the party. So he left. And then Zuraida. These are powerful people who've been very prominent. Hmm. And many others. So to fill in that vacuum, the party could actually make appointments. But Datuk Sri Anwar decided to go for party elections because he felt that whoever gets elected will have the mandate. And that's only fair. You know, we were aware that it can be messy, and you know how Keadilan party elections, it's less of a dance, more of a wrestling match at times. But we also know that the positive thing is that then we'll have a new lineup to face the elections.
Right.
So I think that's the reason. And I think, I mean, you know, people, I think, you know, criticizing Datuk Sri Anwar and all that, that's fair. But ultimately, I think what he did in Pakatan, leading Pakatan, it was a collective decision. And he has tried, I think the party is in fact taken a stronger view in terms of, for example, party logo. Keadilan has, I think most of us were never fans of using Harapan logo since the Sheraton move. But Datuk Sri Anwar put his foot down for the sake of the coalition to test it. Right. And then we got nowhere. Of course, logo is just actually, you know, it's just part of the issue. Then many other things, which I felt, you know, even reaching out to the non-Pakatan parties. I think the party as a whole is more comfortable working with PH, where the camaraderie and solidarity has been built since the Reformasi years, as opposed to the more, you know, opportunistic like Pejuang or Warisan. So I think in that sense, what do you call that? We have to be fair to Datuk Sri Anwar. And I think because of that vacuum, we need that transition. And you know, someone like Rafizi, for example, would be good to come in as number two. And then, you know, 3 years down the road, and then the question will come again. And you know, we'll face it at that time.
So what you're saying is there are succession plans within PKR, or at least there is a sort of building towards a succession plan in that sense. Because I guess one of the questions is not to compare parties within Pakatan Harapan or anything like that, but these are questions that arise. And you know, we look at, let's say, DAP, it's very structured. It's like after X amount of years, then the next person must contest for SecGen and things like that. So there's a clear sort of concrete plans in that sense. And people have sometimes labeled PKR as an Anwar Ibrahim show. It's a personality party, and that personality is Anwar Ibrahim. You are ill on the inside of the party. Are there succession plans? And it wouldn't just be the Anwar Ibrahim sort of show until he's 90 years old or so on and so forth.
You know, I mean, as much as, you know, we see Tun Mahathir and Datuk Sri Anwar being around, you know, human beings don't live forever. You know, people all retire at a certain point. And we have to be prepared for that eventuality. I mean, again, you know, Datuk Sri Anwar has sacrificed and contributed a lot. But what's bigger than this is actually the party as an institution. Again, you know, I keep repeating our strength. Datuk On tried to do this, what, in 1950? A multiracial Malay majority party. And I think that's important, right? Because you can have a multiracial party that's not Malay majority, which, you know, realistically will not go far.
You think so? Country. You think so?
I think so. Because for a multiracial party to work, when the voters are, what do you call that, 60% or 55% Malay, it has to reflect. Because, and you know, how the constitution is built and all that in the country. I'm not saying that, you know, everything is fine with that. What I'm saying is that it's political reality. The most important thing, and I think for multiracialism to finally work, it has to be accepted by bulk of the Malays. It's not surprising that non-Malays accept multiracialism, but for Malays to accept it, then it shows that it has worked. And going back, sorry, to your question, you know, unlike other parties, and I think, I mean, when the ones that you mentioned, Keadilan is the one that corresponds most to the democratic norms. If you look at the Labour Party in the UK, the primaries in the US to a certain extent, although they are different system, in Canada, in Australia, you know, we practice one member, one vote,
right?
At least for the senior positions, right? So it's a bit different when you can predict in certain other parties, when you can predict who will win and not. You can't in Keadilan. And I think that's only fair. So that is the succession plan. Obviously, we all know that it's Saifuddin versus Rafizi. I have to declare my interest. I've gone public with it that I'm for Rafizi. Both are my friends, but in this party elections, I'm with Rafizi and I'm going for vice president. But my point is, obviously, it makes sense if you're talking about succession plan for it to be Rafizi, because Rafizi is 45. You know, this is his first and only party, just like me. We've never been in any other party. So I think that makes sense. And you know, the record that he has from, you know, 2013, 2012, NFC issue, all the way to Invo, fighting 1MDB, you know, all those things, track record, shows that array of talent that he has. And the fact that he was also, you know, threatened with jail and all those things, you know, but also with the corporate experience, right? So it's not just a typical Malaysian opposition politician. Right. So I'm quite typical. You know, I've gone to my lockup and, you know, did my thing. But he had his corporate time as well and all that. And I think that is the skill set that we need for this generation, you know, to relate. So he's young enough but he has experience. Right. And he's even been, you know, at one term in parliament. So I think that is sort of the freshness that we have, that we want, and it'll bode well. And I think for the public, I mean, I'm sorry to say, but for the public, the general sense I get is that Rafizi wins hands down. But of course, party elections is a whole different thing. I accept that. But I mean, that's my hope, you know, for the party to show that we are moving forward is to have the succession plan by voting in Rafizi.
On the show with me today is YB Nik Nazmi, Nik Ahmad, PKR's organising secretary, and Setia Wangsa MP. After the break, I ask him about the battle for the number 2 spot between Rafizi Ramli and Saifuddin Nasution. Keep it here on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Darshan Johan, and on the show with me today is YB Nik Nazmi, Nik Ahmad, PKR's Organising Secretary, and Setia Wangsa MP. And we're talking about the upcoming Parti Keadilan Rakyat elections and what it would mean for the party moving forward. So, YB, I do want to get a little bit deeper into the whole battle between Rafizi and Saifuddin Nasution in a bit. But before that, just quickly clarify for us, YB Nik, what is the difference between the vice president, which is Naik president, and that post, and the deputy president, also a Timbalan president post? Because, and I ask this because when Fahmi Fazil announced on Twitter that he was going to be challenging for the vice president post as well, many people were like, oh my God, is Fahmi Fazil also? So is it a three-corner fight between Rafizi and Saifuddin? And it's not, but perhaps you can clarify a little bit better. What are the difference between the post that you are going for and Fahmi Fazil and so on and going for versus what Rafizi Ramli and YB Saifuddin are going for?
I mean, I don't know the history of it, but I know that from UMNO as well, we do have, it's still the grand old party, right? So in UMNO, they have president, they have Timbalan president, one Timbalan president, and they have a few Naib president. So the senior rank, so you have now Zahid, Mak Hassan as Timbalan, and then you have a few, including our Prime Minister, as the Naib President.
Right.
I mean, the way it works in Malaysian politics, it's the third rank, right? I mean, so you always, at least in Keadilan or in many other parties, it tends to be one president, one deputy who's number two. So he's sort of the one who's the succession, the one the most likely. And then you have a few. Keadilan, in fact, has four elected VIPs, four elected vice presidents, and three. It's very big. It's a very big pool. Three, what do you call that? Three appointed by the president. And the reason being, one is that the party constitution says that if there's no winning Sabah or Sarawak vice president, then the president must appoint one Sabah or Sarawak member to be vice president.
Right.
Okay, so Sabah and Sarawak has that quota there. And, you know, being Keadilan, being so multiracial and gender and everything, I think we don't have women vice president candidates this time, which is, to me, it's something that we really have to reflect. You know, we've had Zuraida before, Nurul Izzah, obviously the most successful vice president. So, you know, we need to incorporate people from to have the gender balance to a certain extent. So we have that big pool. So naturally, also technically, the Ketua Wanita, the Women's Chief, and the Youth Chief, Ketua Angkatan Muda, are same rank as the Naib President
right.
in terms of protocol.
Right. Okay, so with all of that clarified, now Rafizi Ramli and Saifuddin Nasution are going head to head for the Timbalan president, or basically the second in command in that sense. What will it mean for the party moving forward if either of them win? Are we talking about different leadership styles, different philosophies in terms of crafting policies? What are the differences in approach or philosophies, and what will it mean if either one of them wins?
I don't foresee this to be a 2014 or 2018 contest where it was super bruising.
Right.
I joined the party together at the same time. Among the first people I met, and my recruiters were Rafizi. The first person I met was Nurul Izzah, and then I worked together with Saifuddin preparing his speeches 20 years back, right? So there's that camaraderie, I think, which we didn't have with Azmin, I think. But credit to Dato' Sri Saifuddin. He's been with the party from the beginning. I think he's been an effective communicator. Being able to distill many things to the public. He is able to reach to the Malay heartland. As the domestic trade minister, I think he was one of the more effective PH ministers. So credit to him for that. He's been running the party as SecGen for a long time. Rafizi, I've mentioned his background. It's not the typical political background. Unlike Saifuddin, Rafizi, Keadilan is Rafizi's first party. And obviously Rafizi has youth on his side relative to Saifuddin. Rafizi made it clear that we need to reach out to the fence-sitters. We sort of forgot the fence-sitters. And, we have to realize that Keadilan and even PH, that we do not have the same core votes as UMNO. And sadly, maybe even Bersatu to a certain extent. UMNO and PAS, right? Because those two parties, they've been well established, again, cradle to grave. In that sense, the most important market for us is to actually reach out to the normal Mamat, normal Achong, and normal Mutu and Joseph mm-hmm. on the ground who are not so partisan. A lot of them want check and balance on UMNO Barisan Nasional. Sometimes, if we're lucky, they want a change of government. We do have our core voters. I'm not saying that we don't. With 1 million members, we should have core voters. But just that the extent of our core voters is much smaller than the center-right or right-wing parties.
Right.
So, in that sense, we really have to win the fence-sitters. Unfortunately, in Malacca and in Johor, I'm just reinforcing the dynamic that the Malay voter dynamic, where a lot of the Malay fence-sitters went along with Perikatan Nasional.
Yes.
So these are people who accept that UMNO does not deliver. They accept that UMNO is, some of them, are not comfortable with the level of racism expressed by some UMNO guys. At the same time, they are not big fans of us. They are apprehensive that we are too liberal, that DAP is too Chinese, quote-unquote. Mm-hmm. That's the perception.
Right.
So they go to Perikatan. For them, that's a safe bet. And these are voters that we have to win over. And they're not super liberal. They may not listen to BFM that much. Right. But they don't vote UMNO.
Right.
Yeah, they've slowly, since Reformasi and all that slide in the thinking has happened. So we have to go back to that. And we have the social liberal issues. That one is very, very controversial. But we also have, again, the radical economic policies, which I think is generally accepted by most voters. That's the easiest thing to go. And I think Rafizi is willing to go to that. There is a temptation for some people in Keadilan to look at the shortcuts to Putrajaya.
Right.
By talking about pre-election coalitions with either Barisan Nasional or Perikatan Nasional. I am pragmatic to a certain extent. And I think after elections, if there's no stable government and whatnot, for the interest of the country, discussions can be held. But before elections, PH should forge it on our own. As much as, we've had our differences within PH, it's still being to a certain extent, we've had our public spats and all that, right. Especially after Sheraton move. But again, ideologically, we are very similar. It's just a matter of nuance between DAP, Keadilan and Amanah. And to a certain extent, Muda, I would say. Mm-hmm. And DAP, Keadilan and Amanah, because Amanah was the progressive force within PAS, this was a friendship that was forged on the roads and in the lockups since 1998. So something that the trust is there. So yeah. Anything else will be transactional, and to me that's fine, but we cannot abandon this core thing just to go on the transactional immediately. If it means that we have to work hard, and we did in 2018. We even did it in 2013. While not winning the majority of seats, we got the majority of the popular vote. So I think it's something that's doable, and we need to have someone with imagination. And I think Rafizi is someone like that. And obviously, you know, he's not the typical Malaysian politician. He's no diplomat.
Right.
But do we have time for diplomats when I think people are crying for politicians who can solve the problems of the country?
But on the flip side, like you said earlier, right, there's no contest. If this was a Twitter competition or something like that, or for the masses, Rafizi is winning this battle hands down. But is there a concern that you brought up the whole corporate experience? And there's no doubt that Rafizi Ramli has had all this corporate experience. Rafizi Ramli has gone on to, you know, publicly say also, I'm from the T20 background after all my corporate experiences and whatnot, you know, so I don't need politics and, you know, I can always go back to my businesses and so on and so forth. Is there a concern that because he spent so many years in the world of in the corporate world, that his interests or his policy making will favour the corporate world rather than the Mahrain?
Definitely no. I mean, if you look at the policies that he has worked on, in 2013, I think people always get confused, right? I mean, policies we campaigned on 2013, they demand for it in 2018. But anyway, 2013, you know, we worked very closely, for example, to lower the car prices. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the excise duty, even for a MyV, for example, it actually had an impact. The campaign had an impact on government policy afterwards. I still see the sticker today on some cars. Turunkan harga kereta. Free education at that time. You know, we were promising free education at that time and all that. So those were then later the GST, anti-GST. You know, whether economically, you know, people feel that it's good or bad is another thing. But in terms of capturing the imagination, I would argue that the Mansuhkan GST campaign was as important as the anti-Najib sentiments going to the 2018 right. elections. Because GST goes into your pocket, mm-hmm. whereas Najib is just to provide the narrative. And he has been the architect of many of this. I see that he worked even with Azmin, even with Saifuddin, even with in PH, the likes of Dr. Zul, Tony, Kian Ming. So in that sense, you know, as much as he's no diplomat, I mean, when he needs to sit down, he can sit down and discuss. And I think, so the policies, you know, things like, for example, education. I mean, I wouldn't advocate free education now, just on the top, at the top of my head without looking at the numbers. But certainly PTPTN is not sustainable. You know, and it's something that we really need to look into, like, for example, targeted, what you call the amnesty for the poor, on all those things. But basically, you know, these are policies that we need now, which I think can relate with the generation today. And Rafizi has been fighting hard about it. And in fact, you know, some of the more economically right-wing or liberal people are not comfortable with these policies. But I mean, to me, I mean, ideology is secondary. If that is what it takes to benefit the rakyat, then I think we need to bite the bullet. And I think, finally, on this question, is, you know, many oftentimes when people manage to fend racial sentiments, it's simply playing up economic insecurity. It may not be true, you know, or it may be, you know, just because the boss happened to be of a particular race and the worker a particular race, then it's racialized.
Right.
But fundamentally, it's an economic issue. Right. I mean, we have friends in Parti Socialist, Parti Rakyat, you know, who merged with Keadilan, mm-hmm. Who have been making these arguments for years. So what I'm saying is that these are radical policies are what's needed in order to combat the racial or identity politics that's been advocated by Barisan Nasional. But obviously, you need tact, you need nuance. You know, you can't just go out there and talk about, you know, socialism and all that. It's more about people just want to see results. People want to see policies and they want to see how it benefits them. 20-30%, the core UMNO voters, they'll always be racist and they'll never vote for us, come what may. And we can't be more racist than them. And that's why the difficulty in working with them prior to elections.
Right.
It's better to focus on the fence sitters who may not be super liberal, but ultimately it's the Periuk Nasi issues that are their priority.
And I hope that we do get to a point where we can just talk about socialism just like that. You are now running, we talked a lot about Rafizi Ramli. You are also running for the NAIP president's post, the vice president. What can we expect differently if you're one of the winners, in this period where PKR really definitely needs rejuvenation? And like you said, winning over the fence sitters and all. What can we expect from you?
I'm known. Newbie in the party, I'm 40, which in Malaysian politics is not old.
Right.
Technically, I think I still can run for Ketua Pemuda UMNO. but in here, I'm running for NAIP president, right? Mm-hmm. And but I've had I've been in the party, helping out the party for over 20 years, since I was 19, and I've been elected as a rep. At the state level since 2008. So, in terms of experience, it's also been a long experience. This is, again, my only party to date. I don't want to join any other party. And I think I've had a track record of being vocal, even when PH was in government. Not for the sake of being vocal, but, just to speak up. And for the sake, to stand up for our principles. I've had experience even in executive positions in Selangor. So I think that sort of, I think people can value that. But most importantly, I've been youth chief of Pakatan and also of Keadilan. And later, I was the chief organizing secretary, which is my current position until this term ends. When I took over the position, we had 400 branches, right? Ranting. So, which other parties would call cawangan, but in Keadilan we call ranting or branches. And we have 400. We had 400. 222 divisions, 400 branches. Today, we have 222 divisions, but we have 2,400 branches. So there has been a stark improvement in terms of number of branches, because that's the most basic organizational unit. But I'm not happy. I think things can be improved. We are still learning because, some of the branches are not fully operational. And we saw that during Melaka. We saw that during Johor and Sarawak. So things need to improve there. One of the things that I looked at is in terms of quality of candidates. Hmm. We have 1 million quality of candidates and leaders. We have 1 million members, and I think 8,000 people are running in the party election. So it's big. But if you you just sign up, you hear this radio show today and you think, oh, Nick Nazmi is a great guy, blah, blah, blah. You sign up to become a Keadilan member, right, on online. But if you don't know anyone in the division, you don't have connections and all that. And my division, for example, is 5,000 members in Setia Wangsa. You may have trouble to get into the, to be active or to be noticed. You may be a big corporate guy, and yet, nothing happens. And a lot of people after a while, then they just, pack their bags or join another party. My point is, we need to actively locate and take out leaders who are capable. I'm not just talking about professionals or graduates. It can be people without higher education, but who are activists, who are in touch with the ground, and groom them continuously, and remembering that what Keadilan is multiracial. So we always have to be wary. Okay, we may be multiracial membership, but it happens that for whatever reason, a particular race gets left behind in terms of quality leadership, right? So there needs to be some managing. Similarly with gender. I agree to a certain extent that we need quotas. I think the AP has implemented. I think next round, Keadilan should push for 30% at least at Supreme Council level, at delegate level. Because if you get delegates who are 30% ladies or women, then it will reflect in how they vote.
Right.
Right. If you know there's no quotas there, and there's a free for all at the top, again, yep. It tends to be male. So those things need to be worked out. But the second part, which has always been the other challenge, the quotas alone without capacity is not good. So you need to really bring out. I didn't know that there was a very talented young lawyer lady who's in my division until she actually contacted me and she said she wants to run.
Right.
She was very frank in the party elections. But she had the, you know, I would be quite shy to do that, you know, if it was me. So what I'm saying is that we need to do these programs. The Democratic Alliance is a party in South Africa. We work together with them in Liberal International because Kadilan is an observer there. And I did a session with them, and they have, because they were perceived to be a white majority party. It's a bit like what we have in Malaysia, to fight the ANC, which is Black Liberation. You have this white, liberal, but white majority party. Mm. So they have trouble. So to groom Black leadership, they started these leadership programs. It's 1 year long. I'm not that ambitious. 3 months is, I think, enough. But we need to do these things. I've had experience in helping Rafizi setting up the internship programs and all that. And I think this is something we need to do so that it's not just, okay, 1 million members, you know, but we have jokers running for positions in the party, right? So we need the talented people to be. And I'm sure out of 1 million, we can get 100 candidates, for example, who are capable. And then at the state level and for party position. So that, I think, will be my main focus as internally as vice president.
I've just got a couple of questions more for you before we wrap this conversation up. And we have to talk about YB Nurul Izzah, because one of the questions on everybody's mind is why no Nurul Izzah? And that's referring to this internal party elections that's going on. She's not contesting for the deputy or the vice or you know, the most top spot in the party. Again, if we look at social media, now admittedly social media can be a bubble, but if we do look at social media, we talk about the immense popularity of Rafizi Ramli. You know, the same can be said like twofold about YB Nurul Izzah. And, you know, there's been this massive calling for YB Nurul Izzah to not only hold an important position at PKR, but also lead PKR into the future. There's been calls for her to be, you know, the chief of the party. And I know she mentioned that, you know, she wants to sit out to focus on getting the votes of the fan-sitters. But my question is, does YB Nurul Izzah command the same respect and support from PKR members internally? Or, you know, is there some discrepancies there? Is there some unhappiness there? Because you hear things and people have even implied that, you know, the person right at the top may be blocking her from progressing in the party. What can you share about this?
Well, I don't entertain so much the chatter. But what I can say is that Izzah is definitely popular and she's an asset to the party. Again, you know, Rafizi recruited me, but via email. So I only met him like many years later without meeting the person.
Right.
And among the first person I met when I started helping out was Izzah. So, you know, as a, you know, we've gone together as friends, comrades in the struggle for a long time. And she's certainly gone very far. And I think, you know, to me, you know, she deserves credit on her own merit as Nurul Izzah, regardless of the binti. I mean, people have to give credit to her, you know, and she's, I mean, we are not, as I said, we are not super young anymore. So, you know, she needs her space. And the popularity, you know, why I say that she's very popular, because last party elections, Deputy President Azmin won 71,000 of popular votes. Rafizi, 69,000. Nurul Izzah, Vice President, one of the four, she got 90,000, 90. Top of the four. You know, I don't know. I mean, I need to learn what formula she has to garner that votes, right? So the party, I think, support for her is unquestionable. But I think there's merit, because I think it was discussed when Rafizi, Izzah, a few of us discussed, you know, so we've, you know, when, you know, managed to persuade Rafizi to come in. So Rafizi goes for Deputy President. Vice President Aminuddin Harun, the MB of Negeri Sembilan, you know, I think that people did not expect. I think, and to be fair, you know, he has done it, you know, he's very stable. The only new state that we won in 2018 that we did not lose through defections, and the majority is not big. Then it's myself, Chang Li Kang from Tanjung Malim, and Mani Vanen, former Kappa MP. So the idea is that we will focus on the party. and you know, for the party structure, if you want to talk about succession plan and all that. But we don't know when elections are going to happen. So that's why even before this, and I think to a certain extent, the system was trial in Johor. You know, so we are, Rafizi is also introducing Ayuh Malaysia,
right,
to reach out to the fence sitters, mm-hmm. some similar to Invoke last time, to get the funds, to generate excitement, to get volunteers. And there needs to be someone credible and who can champion it. So to do two things at once is a bit difficult because it's different markets. Mm-hmm. And it's happening at the same time. And as much as, you know, a lot of the people who volunteer, the non-members, they wouldn't be too interested in internal party politics, right? So we will, to a certain extent, be stuck a bit for the next 1-2 months. But I think Izzah needs to front and champion and lead Ayuh Malaysia. And then we can work together later. Hopefully, you know, the team is successful and we work with Datuk Sri Anwar and Rafizi and everyone so that the party can reach out to the fence sitters and face GE15.
All right. Before we wrap this conversation, just some closing thoughts from you. What does the future of Keadilan look like? Or what do you hope it will look like? And what will this election results mean for the masses?
I hope that Keadilan members, we have to send a strong signal. It cannot be more of the same. Things that have worked in the past, you know, may not necessarily work right now. And there are red lines that we can never cross. I think we learned the lesson. I mean, we tried, to be fair, to defeat Najib. We did work with Mahathir. We did work with Bersatu. It was difficult for Datuk Sri Anwar and his family. It was difficult for party members. But we felt that it was for a greater cause. But we know from get-go that Bersatu is a different ballgame altogether. Right, I mean, it's UMNO minus Najib minus 1 MDB. So Pejuang is minus Muhyiddin. So in that sense, you know, so you always be like trying to square. And you can't blame just Keadilan, right? I mean, if you look what happened, I mean, we saw how our partners accommodated Bersatu and Mahathir. But that's the past. It's fine. Going forward, let's work together. Keadilan has to be strong. Because if there's no Keadilan, I believe Pakatan Harapan will also be in a weaker position. I think Anthony Loh, my good friend, has also acknowledged that. So I think we cannot have more of the same. And we really have to focus on, you know, it's not just, again, you're talking about bubbles, right? So it cannot be like a Keadilan bubble where we think internally, but measure about what people talk outside. Right. I always go, you know, I take a grab. And people, when they recognize me, then they say, hey, when's Rafizi and Izzah going to come back? That is always the two questions that they ask.
Right.
You know, I don't know, hundreds of times. Not scientific poll, you know, but what I'm saying is that desire is there and people want to hope. And I think we, with this injection of youth into the party, then with, again, what I'm saying, the background, the party's ideology and all that, then I think we will be very strong. We can last. But it's, we have to make that decision. If we just want to, you know, nothing wrong with, I mean, I'm very, very nostalgic about Reformasi and the past. I've gone to lockup as well. But we need to look forward because right. People today have no time for the past. Mm-hmm. They are just thinking about now and maybe tomorrow, not even future, right? So we need to address that. We need to win them over. And I think is this team that we have is important. But finally, you know, my hope is that we can prove that party democracy works. You know, we are using technology. Everything is online, using apps. So, and I believe we can do it with less problems than we had in the past. So that, because unlike in 2010, 2014 and 2018, when the party elections was after general election, now we are doing it when general election can be anytime.
Right.
Maybe if the party elections are in such a mess, the PM will just call a general election. I mean, I don't know. It's possible. So I think that's for everyone, regardless of side, to think about. But I think the most important thing is a message to the voters. Just think about what sort of message we're sending to the voters out there. Because I believe multiracial politics can work and it can also work in Malay constituencies. And that's where Keadilan is strong. I mean, I'm a testimony to that, where I contested at from 2008 until today, UMNO strongholds. And that's where, if we have to break UMNO, that's where we're going to break UMNO. So I think that is our challenge, to show that to the voters that this can work.
On that note, YB Nick, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you.
That was YB Nick Nazmi, Nick Ahmad, PKR's Organising Secretary, and Setia Wangsa MP, if you missed the full conversation. You can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashan Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.